This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And that reminds me, if you're looking for a good book in the Tampa Bay area, pop over to Book Swap in Carrollwood, and you will find the perfect book there for you. It's a lovely little shop, and I love little bookstores, so have a trip over there and find a good book. And while you're there, think about looking for books about Paris, because today I have a very, very special guest.
I want to step out down the Champs-Élysées, from the Arch of Triumph to the Petit Palais, that's for me. Bonjour, Paris.
And I have to say bonjour, Jamie Cat Kalin. Hi.
Bonjour, Patsy. How are you? I loved your introduction, and I loved hearing Bonjour, Paris, and thinking about Audrey Hepburn in Funny Face.
That was great. I love that. That movie just thrills me, and I never get tired of listening to the song. And I have been to Paris many times, but I don't think as many times as you, although I did live in England for many years, and so I spent many weekends in Paris or outside of Paris. And so when I got this book, I was like, oh, this is like a dream come true. You did so many things in this book, which is called Parisian Charm School, French Secrets for Cultivating Love, Joy, and That Certain Je Ne Sais Quoi. And of course, I love that you have the word joy in the title of your book.
Yes, I'm all about joy. It's very, very important to me. I always talk about joie de vivre in my books, and I believe in it as a philosophy of life.
And, you know, as I said, you do things in this book that I wish I had done, and now I'm looking at the book and I'm saying, okay, I have to go back to Paris. I haven't been back for several years, and so I can do some more of these things, because if a girl is going to France, really, I recommend this book above any other book. You don't really need any other book to do a tour of France, because this will inspire you to do things out of the ordinary. And so tell us about your love of France, and of course, how you started this, and your French lessons, and just tell us about it.
Well, my grandmother was French. She was French-American, but she was very French. She spoke with an accent, and I grew up just watching her and really coming to the realization that there was something very special about her and how she approached life. She did not have a lot of money. She lived a very simple life, but my grandparents had a big garden, and they always grew their own vegetables and cooked a lot. And she was just incredibly elegant. She would arrive at our home in Stamford, Connecticut, and she always wore a beautiful scarf, and she got her hair done, and stockings and heels and a skirt. And she was just kind of a sensation, and yet quietly elegant. So I would say that's where my fascination for all things French first began. And then through the years, it just continued. It just never went away. And when we lived on Cape Cod, I studied with Madame M, and she's very, very much featured in Parisian Charm School. And she's a femme de certain age, I would say probably around 90. And I just continued these lessons where I learned not just my French language, but I learned how to flirt, how to dress elegantly, how to why being intelligent and reading books is just about the most charming thing that you can do.
Well, you know, what I liked about the book is you have little sections at the end of each chapter with sort of practical information, pratique, as you say, how we can achieve some of these goals. I like the one about fashion and clothes. Tell us why French women just have that certain look.
A lot of it has to do with the way they're brought up, and grandmothers have a lot to do with helping a young girl develop and truly understand her own unique style. And I think that that's a lot of the secret to French fashion and style, is that, yes, there may be a certain trend for a season, but each French girl and then French woman understands what makes her look great and what really belongs to her. So they'll mix, you know, consignment shop finds with brand new trendy clothes, with classics. But the fascinating thing about French women in style is that they are so original, and I think that's why the entire world turns to France to understand fashion and style.
Oh, I know. One of the things I just loved when I was in Paris, I think every trip I took, I would pick up a scarf because they are so beautiful there.
Yes, and, you know, you can have maybe four really nice dresses, and that's all you have, and maybe they're all, this is a very French thing, and you repair them and you take good care of them, but when you change things up with a beautiful scarf, a silk scarf, and every color that you choose is going to change the look of the dress, and it just gives you more mileage. And yeah, their scarves are so gorgeous. So did you buy yourself an Hermes scarf?
Oh yes. At one point when I was in my days when I had extra cash, that you know, the
yes,
wonderful
but
thing.
I would say that even if you don't have a lot, you can go in and buy one of those. I can't remember the French word for it, but it's just like a little tie. So it's not a full scarf, but it's, you can get one for maybe 80 euros, and at least it begins your Hermes scarf collection.
Exactly. Now, you know, one of the things that I like what you mentioned in the book is that it doesn't matter if you're rich or poor. It's really the just using good taste.
Yes, yes, exactly. And it's not about, actually what's interesting is, you know, the French have told me that their style and their sense of taste doesn't come from having a lot, but actually comes from having very little. So, you know, the country has been through, you know, thousands of years of invasions and all sorts of difficulties and moments where they had nothing, where everyone was poor. But out of that comes a kind of inventiveness and creativity. And so that's also the secret to their look, and it's the secret to their joie de vivre, because they will have just a little something, but they truly appreciate it and enjoy it. There's an expression in the book that the French want to put a flower on everything. And it's really, what it basically means, it could literally mean put a flower on it. So put a flower on your lapel or put a flower in your hair. But it also is a metaphor for whatever it is you have, just a little piece of toast, a little baguette, you will add some confiture, some jam that's your grandmother made in her from her the berries in her garden, or you will put you always put, if you watch Jacques Pepin on PBS, at the end of a dish, he makes a dish, he will always chop up some scallions or some parsley to add color and to make it pretty.
You're right. And I know that one of the things, it's the same thing, put a flower on your table. Just put that beauty in your life.
Yes. Yes.
Now, you had a wonderful time of, you not just in Paris, but you also traveled a lot outside of Paris. And so many people, you know, they make their first trip to Paris and they don't actually ever get out of Paris. And I always tell people how wonderful it is to get out into the countryside. Some of my fondest memories are driving like to Amboise and driving along the river. And on the one side, you have the cliff that looks, you know, over the river. And on the other side, you have the caves filled with wine tasting. And it's just such a wonderful thing to do.
Yes, and I think that's where you really find the heart of the French culture, is when you get outside the major cities and you go into the little villages and you get to meet people. And there's such a traditional way of living that's so interesting and so agriculturally based, which I think we forget about when we're in Paris. We don't necessarily see, yes, the vineyards and the winemaking, and they have festivals for everything. I was in Agen not too long ago, and they had the Pruneau Festival, which is basically dried figs and dried plums. But I just love the fact that they have a whole festival to celebrate this. I had for researching Parisian Charm School, I had a fellowship to the Virginia Center for the Creative Arts in Auvillar. So Auvillar is a little village in the southwest of France. And that's where I truly began to understand, because it was such a tiny, tiny village, the idea of the secret garden, because I remember going to town around noon, going up to the little village square, or actually more of a circle, because everything is a circle in France, and finding that the boulangerie was closed, you know, lunchtime, 12 to 2. And I went to the post office, and that was closed, fermé, and the library, fermé. And finally, I found that the 11th century cathedral was open. And I remember going in there and then coming out into the sunlight and being more aware of how people were around. They were inside their homes. I could hear them having their midday meal behind the windows and the lace curtains. And what I realized was that the villages still have those 2-3 hour lunches and that sense of a slower pace and a real enjoyment of the simple pleasures of life.
And it's so wonderful if you get to one of those, you find a village where they have a very, you know, just a little inn, a small restaurant, and the food there is better than anything you've ever tasted in your life.
Oh, Patsy, I completely agree. And actually, in this village of Auvillar, my husband joined me for one of my visits to this little village, and one night we went out to dinner, and it was a restaurant we hadn't seen before. Well, it was actually a woman's living room. You know, it was actually her home. So there were about 3 tables, and she cooked for us. And then, and oh my God, it was so delicious. And then for the cheese course, you know, instead of just saying, all right, well, what would you like on your plate? She brought out this huge tray, like a rolling trolley. And it was, you just picked out whatever you wanted, and then she added it up. There was, you know, great sense of trust there, and I don't know, really, really charming.
Oh, I know. I just love those hidden away places, and I hope that people will, when they're thinking about making a trip to Paris, if they can take at least 2 days just to get out of the city and to get into the countryside, it gives you such an appreciation. You know, for the book world, of course, we had a, it was very sad that Peter Mall, you know, who wrote A Year in Provence, passed away recently. And that was one of my favorite books and one of my favorite movies, that Year in Provence, because that was, it really touched into not just what France is like, but what the people are like.
Yes. I didn't realize he had just passed away. I'm so sad.
Yes.
Because I also loved A Year in Provence. Oh, my God.
Yeah, just a week ago. So, yeah.
Oh, my God, I didn't know.
I know.
And I totally agree with you. It's the people. They're just so, down to earth and authentic and open. I think, you know, they don't meet, and you don't see it in Paris. Parisians won't immediately open their doors to you and their heart to you. But when you get into the little villages, and they meet an American, I'll have to tell you my story about my husband in the marketplace in this little village of Auvillar. We went there for the market day, and my husband was looking at all the seafood, you know, because he actually, we used to live on the bay, and he would do his own scalloping and with the haul underwater gear, but. He started talking to this Frenchman who had the market, and it was selling the mussels and clams, and he said to my husband, "Oh, you're American." And then he reached out his hand and said, "I just want to thank you." And my husband was very confused by this and said, "For what?" And he said, "For saving us during World War II. Thank you. Merci beaucoup, monsieur." And you know, my husband wanted to say, well, I didn't personally do anything. You know, I was too young. But at the same time, this joy and this just, this authentic moment. It's so French.
It is. And, I often hear from people where they'll say, oh, well, you know, maybe when we go to France, you know, they don't like Americans, or they're not going to be, or they're going to be rude to us. And I said, you know, in all of the times I went, and I've been there 30, 40 times, not one time was anyone ever rude to me in France. I mean, ever. In England, yes. Oh, boy, the people in England would be very rude. But in France, I never. And it was funny, in those days, my husband used to wear a cowboy hat. So wherever we went.
I bet they loved that. I bet they loved it.
Oh, they loved it. They absolutely loved it. And I mean, we'd walk into a boulangerie or a restaurant, and I mean, he would be treated like, you know, he was from JR from Dallas.
Right.
But they were delightful.
That's great.
You know, and it didn't, it even in Paris, where, as you say, that people are busier as in any big city, but still, I always found the people delightful.
Yes, yes, me too. You know, I think it's just an old myth that the French are rude. And I talked to Madame M, who's very much featured in Parisian Charm School, about this, and because she was in Paris during the late 60s, early 70s, and she said the misunderstanding between Americans and the French actually date back to that era. You know, she, after World War II, they really had nothing, and they, they just, their clothes were literally thread worn. And so she remembers American students coming over in the 50s and 60s and wearing, hippie clothes and tattered jeans and just, you know, a kind of a scruffy look, which was very fashionable here. But because the French had just lived through so much and had so little, and whatever they had, they would take really good care of and try very hard to look well put together, despite the fact that they had nothing. So she said that the French thought that the Americans, it's mostly like American teenagers, I think, with torn jeans, were actually making fun of them. And so I think that's where this idea that the French are rude to Americans, that's where it comes from. But that's a long time ago, and it's just not true. It's just not true. They love us.
And they love to, well, the wonderful thing about French people, they love to talk. And so if you know anything, if you read some book, if you just get into a conversation, they love to talk about ideas. They love to talk about books. And that's one of the things that you mention in your book, this, which is itself a very charming book, Parisian Charm School. You talk here about the importance of reading so that you are able to hold an intelligent conversation.
Yes, yes. They really care about developing an intellectual life. It's high priority for them. And so when an American comes along and has something intelligent to say or wants to talk about books, and it doesn't necessarily have to be about French books, the French love this. And, you know, at the beginning of the book, at the beginning of Parisian Charm School, I quote Edith de Belleville, and I think that this is a perfect example. She's a Parisian girl that I interviewed for the book, and she begins my first chapter, but her quote is, "If I want to seduce a man, I won't show him I'm interested in him, but I will show him I am an interesting woman." You see the difference? So basically what she's saying, and I think this is the French philosophy, to be interesting, to develop your intellect, to have something wonderful and intriguing to say. And actually, she told me she actually speaks Spanish. I'm not Spanish. She does speak Spanish. She speaks French, English, Spanish, and surprisingly, Chinese. So when she said she met a lovely gentleman, she doesn't immediately say, "Hey, and I know Chinese. What do you think of that?" She waits until there's a moment, say they, you know, she's meets a Chinese couple, and then she'll suddenly begin speaking Chinese. And she said it's so much more delightful to have a little surprise and for this knowledge to come out in a very natural way.
Well, it's all part of this game of flirtation, which, of course, the French are the best at. And I'm, you know, we're talking about it nowadays with all of the things that people are talking about, sexual harassment. But flirting is different, and it's so, we're in such a difficult situation. I feel sorry for young people today because it is confusing for them to know what can we do, what can we say, what, you know, and all of that. And I found it delightful to read your little stories in here about flirtation and how it works and why it works.
Yes, because I think when you say flirtation to an American, we assume, oh, that's some sort of come on, or it's a tease, or it's sexual. And for the French, it's not. For the French, it's the art of conversation. And it's just, you know, it's about being interesting and also being intelligent. So, you know, the expression flirt comes from the French expression conter de fleurer, which is basically to speak pretty or to speak like a flower. To talk flower would be, I guess, a literal translation. But this is Madame M told me this, so she's so wonderful. You know, it's really about not even necessarily flirting with somebody that you're interested in having a relationship with. Grandmothers flirt. Children are flirting. But again, it's not in the sense that we traditionally think of flirting. It's basically to speak pretty, to say nice things. It's as simple as saying, "Oh, I love this, I love your shoes," or "My, what a beautiful day today." It's actually about the art of conversation, and I talk about this in Parisian Charm School, and I would love to convey this idea to your listeners, Patsy, which is if you start to get into conversations with everyone and you start to quote unquote flirt with everyone in the French sense, not the American sense. So when you're standing on the line at the CVS waiting for your prescription, instead of looking at the person who's in front of you and is a nuisance because they're ahead of you, think of this is a lovely opportunity to practice my art of conversation with somebody in my community and to just get to know people and realize that it makes the world a better place if we talk to one another in a nice way, in a sweet way. And then the other thing I want to talk about is the whole idea, you know, I know that everyone is a little bit nervous now. How are we going to conduct romance in the era of sexual harassment? And I think we need some rules of engagement. And I think if we look at the French, we might, not that they're perfect, but if we ask ourselves, is this civilized? Is this intelligent? Is this dignified? Is this charming? I think that that would be a good way to help us know how to proceed.
Well, you know,
certainly, grabbing someone is not charming.
No, that's not charming at all. And one of the things, you know, I like that you wrote about were some simple things that people can do. And one of them, of course, is dancing, both for the way that you look and also for the connection as human beings, how we can connect through dance.
Yes, and I am a big proponent of partner dancing because I think that there's something very powerful about holding hands or holding one hand and touching someone slightly on the back. I think eye contact. And I think just the closeness of one heart near another heart. My husband and I are taking tango dancing lessons, and I can tell you that it's made an amazing difference in our marriage. It's because I think part of it is we're dancing with a group of other couples, and sometimes we have to switch partners, and then we come back to our original partner. But this really makes us more self-aware, aware of our body moving through space, aware of our posture, our grace. And I do think that dancing leads to romance. It's a very, very powerful thing for all of us.
Well, that is just one chapter in the book, and there are so many. As I said, if one is going to Paris and one has, you know, preconceived ideas, it would be really nice to read this book first, and then it opens up your mind to the French people and to interesting places to go that are sort of off the beaten track, because I love your discussion of course, fashion. And one of the subjects I want to talk about are fans, because I love fans. It's funny that you love fans. Oh. I love fans, and I wish that we did use them here in America, because I think fans are so nice. As a matter of fact, I have, you know, on the table as we walk into my apartment, I just have a little fan. It's not a major fan, but it's just something about it. When I look at that fan, I think, oh, there's something calming about a fan.
Oh, I love that, Patsy. I so agree with you. I'm now traveling the country and hosting book events, and I give my audience paper fans, and I give them a little lesson in how to communicate with their fan or how to use it in a graceful way. And you'd be amazed how everyone responds to holding a fan, and the men respond just as much. So, yes, I agree with you. There's something incredibly special about fans. When I was in Paris researching Parisian Charm School, I visited Du Valeroy, which is the iconic fan creator, and they made fans for Marie Antoinette, and they go way, way back.
And Marlene Dietrich.
Yes, yes, exactly. So I hope my book encourages everyone to consider getting a fan. You know, you could start with just a very simple one, but, you know, in the summer, it's so lovely, particularly it cools you off, but it's also a fashion accessory.
Well, as you say, there are so many things that one can use as a fashion accessory. And if it's not a fan, you can wear glasses. And funnily enough, when you mentioned that, my goddaughter started wearing glasses without any glass in them. And I looked at her, I said, do you need glasses? Because I didn't realize at first there was no glass. And I said, do you need glasses? And she said, no, I just want it look like that. And so she's got these beautiful big glasses with no glass in them. But I tell you, it makes an impact. And I love the way, and, you know, she hasn't read your book yet, because I'm going to give her a copy of your book. So I was so surprised when you were writing here, how you can use eyeglasses as accessories, and how she did this on her own. And so I thought, that's delightful.
I love that. I love that. And yes, this is a trend now, to wear glasses either without lenses or with just, you know, lenses that have no prescription in them. And they're very, very fashionable. And it also gives you something to take off. So, you know, I think we make the mistake of we think it's you know, sexy to not wear much, but it's actually much sexier to wear a lot, not a lot, but to wear these, you know, a scarf or eyeglasses or a fan that then can be, you know, the fan can be lowered if it's covering your face, or the scarf can be loosened or removed, or the eyeglasses can be taken off at just the right moment. So these accoutrements are actually very, very important for women in terms of our feminine arts.
Well, you know, I want to thank you so much, Jamie, for being on the program today. And the book is Parisian Charm School, French Secrets for Cultivating Love, Joy, and That Certain Je Ne Sais Quoi. And it's by Jamie Cat Kalin. And it's available wherever books are sold, and you can get it online. And do you have a website you want people to go to?
Yes, I do. And it's jamiecatcallen.com. So so that's my website, and anyone can find me on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. I'm all over the blogosphere.
Well, I want to recommend this book to anyone. I mean, just to read it takes you to France, and that is a joy in itself. Then another thing that they should do, I think people should read the book and then get the Audible version of this book and also your other books, French Women's Secrets, Beautiful Every Day. To have this in an Audible version is wonderful because you hear the proper pronunciation for all of the French words and, you know, places that you go and the I think it's a wonderful one of the I love Audible books because of that, because you can learn the proper pronunciation of words. So I want to recommend to all my listeners to also get the Audible version.
Oh, thank you. Yes, all the books are on audio. There's French Women Don't Sleep Alone, Bonjour Happiness, and then Ooh La La, and now Parisian Charm School.
Okay, I have to get that French Women Don't Sleep Alone for my girlfriend. She's available. She's looking for somebody. She needs it.
So good. That's the one from Finding Love and Romance.
Okay.
And then Bonjour Happiness is for Joie de Vivre. And in Bonjour Happiness, I do focus on the little villages and the simpler country life. Ooh La La is a French Woman's Secrets to Feeling Beautiful Every Day. So that's about beauty and wellness. And then Parisian Charm School is about charm.
Okay. Well, Jamie, going to have you back on and give you the entire hour, because there's so many things I want to talk to you about. But I want to thank you for being on Joy on Paper today, because it was a joy to talk to you. And thank you so very, very much.
Thank you so very much. It was a joy for me, too. I really appreciate it.
Okay. Well, have a wonderful book tour. Bye-bye now.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye.
Au revoir.
Au revoir.
Okay. Oh, she's wonderful. We're going to go to a commercial, and then we have a...
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, inventor of MyPillow. My employees and I would like to thank you for making MyPillow possible. Years ago, when I invented MyPillow, I thought I was the only one out there with problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I'd flip-flop all night or wake up with a sore neck or headache. So that's why I invented MyPillow. You can adjust MyPillow's patented fill to your exact individual needs to help you get to sleep faster and stay there longer to get the quality sleep you need. I back it with my 10-year warranty and my 60-day money-back guarantee. And now to thank you, I'm bringing back my best offer ever. Buy one of my MyPillows and get another one absolutely free.
Support Joy on Paper and local authors. Go to MyPillow.com and use promo code PATSY. P-A-T-Z-I.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I am back with my guest, Rick Bava. Hi, Rick, are you there?
Patsy, thanks for having me on the show, and thank you for all you do for readers and writers.
Well, it's my pleasure to have you on because your book is fascinating. It's called In Search of the Baby Boomer Generation, and boy, we have a lot of baby boomers out there.
Yeah, baby boomers are readers. There's no question about it. As a matter of fact, many have rediscovered reading and have also found a new place to go called the local library.
It is so important. Really, I have worked in, I started off as a candy striper in a hospital when I was young. And
right.
Whether I work there or volunteer work later on in my life, whenever there were old people around, you always could tell which ones were active mentally. Those were the ones who were reading books.
That's right. I think that's really, really true. One of the activities that I have is I'm associated with Today's Senior Magazine. I write the respected column, the Baby Boomer Corner, for that magazine, and that's kind of the input that I get as well from all we see in the marketplace.
Because reading is different from just watching television. Reading moves those gray cells around in there, that all those little electrical charges that you need in order to keep your mind active. And
You're engaged.
Exactly. You're engaged and not just vegging out, which, by the way, there was recently a story about how the worst thing you can do is actually retire, because if you retire and don't do anything, if you're going to retire, do things, as you said, go to the library. My sister is absolutely brilliant. When she went, she retired, but she went to the library and she got books on knitting and crocheting. She taught herself. She got books on origami, and she makes the most beautiful origami, all because she stayed active and she went out there to the library.
Well, in the book, In Search of the Baby Boomer Generation, I capture this point. You're very astute to bring that out, Patsy. have a whole chapter on second careers for baby boomers. As you know, baby boomers are people born between 1946 and 1964. Many at this stage of their life have worked hard, raised a family, and really want to see about what is the best path forward in their life. And many are finding second careers, encore careers, philanthropy, charitable work, whatever it may take to really continue to contribute to society. So out of all the points that you could have brought out, I think it's fascinating that you zeroed in on that, because it's really, really an accurate statement.
And not just the reading side, also the writing side, because so many people have stories in their families or stories that they've thought about all of their lives, and they said, I want to sit down and write a book. And I've had some writers in here who started writing when they were 80 years old, and they've written their family memoirs. And they are
well,
so...
I think that's right.
This is what you need.
Right. Yeah, my wife, who's a molecular biologist by trade, her mother, who she spends a lot of time caregiving for, her mother keeps journals and has kept journals all of her life. And what a wonderful process for people of our age and stage to be able to interact with our elderly parent, A, through the journals, but also the elderly parent staying active, continuing to write in what is happening today. I think that's a very, very good suggestion.
Now, because, you know, as you write in the book, you talk about a lot of the problems of aging, whether it's, you know, dealing with loss or dealing with illnesses, dealing with financial things. So from that point of view, the book is fascinating. And I think also helps people sort of hone in on what they need to be doing.
I think one thing that I would say, and thanks for having paid attention to the subject matter. That's why you are so respected. But it is a kind of a look at a snapshot of where baby boomers have been, where they are, the topics and issues germane to them now, and the path forward for baby boomers. And what I think happens and what the book has helped stimulate is a discussion of the issues facing baby boomers today. And you find that when baby boomers talk to other baby boomers, maybe using the book as a stepping stone, you're not alone, that the issues you're facing are the issues of other baby boomers.
And I think one of the things that is nice about the book that baby boomers need to be able to share their memories, to be able to talk to each other, and to do activities where they can participate together.
I think that's true. You know, what ends up happening is you find that a lot of baby boomers are looking up old friends from college days. They're rediscovering friends and colleagues and associates through social media, through Facebook or LinkedIn. They're finding that they can listen to a song and that'll bring back a special memory. So I think it's really interesting. And if you look at the thread of our conversation so far, it has aspects of looking back, but also looking forward. So you can find the memory. You can look at the issues that you're facing today, like caring for an elderly parent, but you also then can look forward to figure out how you want to continue to make a contribution to society, or the path forward, as I like to say. And that is really, if you bundled up the message of the book, those are the aspects that we try to talk about. And you know, Patsy, it's really interesting. That's really why I went out and looked in search of the baby boomer generation. As you know, I traveled the country for 2 years interviewing hundreds of baby boomers to bring out these kinds of aspects to create a discussion. And I'm lucky because of that, that many say I'm a baby boomer thought leader, to be able to find how baby boomers can continue to contribute. We're not a generation that wants to just sit on the step and rock in a rocking chair. We want to continue to rock the world, as they say.
Well, that's the right attitude to have. And as a matter of fact, I think that this book is, of course, valuable for the boomer generation, but I think the next generation after that should also read it, because it, one of the problems with younger people than, you know, just below the boomers, are saying, you know, I have to think about the future, but I'm not sure exactly what I should be doing. And I like the chapters where you do talk about, you know, planning for the future, Social Security, Medicare, what it means. You have to start looking at that when you're younger and
yes,
being prepared.
You know, you're really right on that. A major university in our country has formed a relationship with me, and I'll be starting in the fall to do just what you're talking about, to be able to not only enhance my own generation, the baby boomer generation, but to use what we've learned, the experiences that we've had, to be able to pass it on to the next generation. How do we continue to learn at any age if we're not studying and looking and seeing what has come before in order to help us in the future?
Well, that is the situation is that many baby boomers made mistakes. They didn't plan. They didn't think ahead because, you know, in the 50s and 60s, when they were growing up, everything looked like everything was going to be all right. You know, there was sort of this myth that, well, you're going to have Medicare and you're going to be fine, so you don't have to think about right. the future. And they went through that hippie era where right. nobody thought about anything. And then they wake up today, you know, okay, well, it's a little late for us, but if we can help the next generation, the generation behind us, to plan. And I was really impressed that a report came out that millennials are starting to save money, which
that's the Bank of America study. And by the way, you are right. It just shows me what a student you are here. Yes, Bank of America has 16% of millennials who have over $100,000 in savings. And the reason why that is, Patsy, is because actually, the millennial generation actually looks more to the greatest generation, the generation before baby boomers, because they can find common ground, because the millennial grew up much like the greatest generation did during hard times. The greatest generation had the Great Depression. The millennials had the Great Recession. And so that's a good thing. In the middle, though, the baby boomers had, you know, did live life to the fullest, and not all can say that they are in great financial stead right now. Some are, you know, some have done the proper thing, saved for the future, has a good 401k, home paid, and things of that nature. But there's still time. That's why there is an emphasis in the book about Social Security and Medicare. Baby boomers do need Social Security, and that is very, very important. How visionary was Franklin Delano Roosevelt to create Social Security?
And now how visionary we have to be in thinking that we need more. We need also yeah. we really need to take hold of it ourselves and make sure that we are set for the future. But,
yeah,
you know,
that's right. I would say this, though, and your audience will like to know this. There is positives on the horizon. We are in much better position as a country today than we were at the start of my journey to write the book. And since I've been able to see the thread of over the last 10 years of where baby boomers have progressed, I can see the positives, and so there is a good positive message that your audience can take from our discussion.
And, of course, we should mention that one of the positive things, it was really a wonderful thing to do this tour and to be able to talk to so many people, wasn't it?
Right, it really was. It was a great experience. I'll value it for the rest of my my life. There's something to be said from having discussions, may it be in a coffee shop, in a baseball stadium, wherever the case may be. Recently, my wife and I went back to my house where I went to did my undergrad, and we walked around and shared some memories.
That's Madison. Madison.
Exactly. University of Wisconsin.
I forgot to mention, that's where my son is. He's in Madison.
Oh, isn't that wonderful, Patsy? Yeah, that's great.
I knew there was something that connected us.
That's absolutely right.
He's in his second year doing his PhD. And he loves it there. He just loves the school. It's wonderful, and so it's very exciting that that's where you did your undergrad.
Oh, that is great common ground between us. You can tell him that the Wisconsin Alumni Association has been a great supporter of the book and has really been out there as a great proponent of the book, and it's helped me to connect with a lot of baby boomers because of it. I'm glad that he's enjoying the experience.
Oh, he loves it, and you know, for a Florida boy, the first year was tough because. Yeah. He had to learn that snow was, he called me up after his first day of shoveling, and he said, you know, Mom, snow is heavy. I said, yeah.
That's really good. You can tell him I was a communication arts major with a business emphasis. So if he ever gets near Vilas Hall, that's where I kind of spent my time, but it's a wonderful campus, and it's a wonderful group of people at Wisconsin. There's a certain kindness and courtesy about the Midwest, yeah. and I think he'll find that.
That's what he's found. Well, you know, I want to thank you so much for being on the program today. It's been really a joy for me to talk to you, and the book is by Rick Bava, okay? And I just searching here for the you know, boomer generation is something that so many people can relate to. And I want you to really, you know, thank you so much for being on the program today. I'm running out of time. I've had a busy time, but it's In Search of the Baby Boomer Generation. And do you have a website or anything you want people to go to?
Yeah, they can find it on Amazon, too. It's In Search of the Baby Boomer Generation, and they can look there. It's been a very well-received book, quite acclaimed, and if they just look up the title, they'll find it. And let me just share with you, it's been a wonderful experience talking to you, a great opportunity, and was honored to be a part of your program.
Well, thank you so very much. I really enjoyed talking to you, too. So, Rick Bava, bye-bye for now, and I'll have you back on again, okay?
Oh, very good. Thank you so much, Joy.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Wow. Okay, things really went fast here, but I want to thank everyone for listening today. Oh, it's so exciting. I've got so many things happening. But go to Facebook. That's my word for the year. It's Facebook. Go and like me on Facebook, and then I'll like you, and follow me on Twitter, and do all of that good stuff. And bye-bye now. Bye-bye.